Now, we have a very simple programme. I'm going to do volume 12, beginning at April the 18th, 1917. I'm going to do it for an hour. Then I'm going to give you about 15-minute break. Then we'll do another hour. Then you'll have lunch. Then you'll have another hour. And then you'll have another hour. Is that okay? So April the 18th, 1917. This is volume 12. So this is April the 18th, 1917. This is about fusing oneself in the divine will. Louisa said, I was fusing myself in my sweet Jesus in order to be able to diffuse myself in all creatures and to fuse them all in Jesus. Now, I want you to notice that I'm not fusing just for myself alone. I'm fusing myself in order to be able to diffuse myself in all creatures and to fuse them in Jesus. This entire mission that we are part of is to give maximum glory to God, that is his due, and also to make reparation and substitution for the rest of humanity and to save as many souls as possible. So that's a vital a point there. As you keep thinking, loving, repairing, etc., the rays of the sun is formed. And my will, as background, makes itself the crown of these rays. And the sun is formed, which, rising up into the air, melts into a beneficent dew for all people. So the more you fuse yourself in me, the more suns keep forming. Now, a sun is a source of light. God is light. And Jesus told us that we have to be the light of the world. So that's Matthew 5, and I think it's verse 14, somewhere between 14 and 17. Oh, how beautiful it is to see these suns, which rising and rising remain circumfused within my own suns. So these are little lights in the light. And they pour beneficent dew over all. Now, notice the universalism of anything that God does. Because Jesus says in these writings that God loves each human being as much as he loves the whole. So if the whole are not benefited, then we're not loving the way he loves. How many graces do souls not receive? I'm so taken by this, Jesus said, that as they fuse themselves, I pour abundant dew of all kinds of graces upon them. That's upon you, the people who are actually doing the fusing, so that they can form even greater suns. Now, I want you to check out John 15 there. Fruit, more fruit, and much fruit, and fruit that will last. Okay, the Lord is like the farmer who looks for a better harvest next year and an even better one the year after, such that I may be able to pour more abundantly the beneficent dew over all. Now, why does he want us producing more fruit? It is so that the benefits will be given in a greater and greater way to everybody else. So we have to be fusing ourselves in him as frequently as possible. There's someone at the door. And as I was fusing myself, Louisa said, I could feel light, love and graces being poured over my head. So there we've started on a very good point, that we need to be fusing all the time to make sure that this incredible divine dew is being poured out upon the human race. So May the 2nd, 1917, how Jesus died little by little. And since we're at the beginning of Lent, we also die little by little. We don't die all of a sudden. So finding myself in my usual state, I was lamenting to my sweet Jesus because of his privations, saying to him, my love, who could ever think that your privation could have cost me so much? I feel myself dying little by little. Each act of mine is a death that I feel, because I cannot find the life. But dying and living is even more cruel, even more it is a double death. So the experience that Louisa is having of the privations of Jesus is quite literally a martyrdom for her. And Jesus acknowledges that and explains it to her as well. So Jesus came and he said, "My daughter, courage and firmness in everything." Now, what the translator writes down as firmness, you should write down as fortitude. Fortitude is one of the great gifts of God to us. And I call it steel girders for your soul. When people are building skyscrapers and very high buildings that they want to survive hurricanes and major disasters, they put steel girders into them, and it goes, they go right very deep into the earth and as high as possible so that the building can survive a terrible shock. Well, the fortitude that the Lord wants to put into us is what enables us to survive spiritual shocks. And then he said, "Don't you want to imitate me? I too died little by little. As people offended me in their steps, I felt the tearing in my feet, but with such bitterness of spasm as to be capable of giving me death. And while I would feel myself dying, yet I would not die. As they offended me in their works," the first thing is in their steps, the second thing in their works, "I felt death in my hands, and at the cruel torment I agonized, I felt faint, but the will of the Father sustained me. I would die and I would not die." He's trying to explain to Louisa that the privations that she's experiencing are a participation in his passion, and that she needs to let this mystery happen in her more quietly than she is prone to do it. So number three, Jesus said, "As the evil voices, the horrendous blasphemies of creatures reverberated in my voice, I felt myself suffocating, my word being choked and poisoned. And I felt death in my voice, but I wouldn't die. And my tortured heart," this is number four, "as it palpitated, I felt in my heartbeat the evil lives, souls tearing themselves away. And my heart was in a continuous tearing and lacerations." Now, Jesus is saying that this was happening all during his lifetime, but it's happening ever since in the Eucharist, in his Eucharistic presence. And so he said, "I agonized and I died continuously in each soul." Now, instead of the word creature, I'm putting soul. And I've only one comment in my book for me, and it's ouch. So if you go back and read that, that in all my evil words, steps, words, works, and so on, he has agonized for me. Now, that was the thing that St. Augustine said changed everything for him. He died for me. He actually undid all the evil that I have done. And that's the thing that makes us truly come round and actually love him. So he said, "I agonized and I died continuously in each soul, in each offense. Yet love, the divine will, forced me to live. This is the reason for your dying little by little." So here is another explanation of her privations. As we go through these writings, Jesus explains the privations to her from different angles. So it was the divine will, which is love. I've told you that the summary of the 36 volumes is divine will and love, because God is love, 1 John 4:7. And God is the divine will. So love was the reason why Jesus made reparation for all the rest of us. And love is the reason why he asks us to enter into the divine will and to make reparation and substitution for everybody else. I call that pouring my drop of water into the wine of his redemption. So it's my participation. So he said, "I want you together with me." I want your company in my debts. In other words, he wants each one of us in our own small, tiny way to be co-redeemers with him. And look at the extraordinary humility of God there, that he could say, I'll do it all by myself. Human beings do that, don't they? They want to get all the glory for themselves. But instead of that, Jesus wants us to actually participate with him in his redeeming. And when you come to chapter 3 of the book of Revelation, he says, I will let you share my throne as well. He's the only king who ever wanted anybody to share his throne. So May the 10th, 1917, how with his breath, Jesus gives motion and life to all creatures. Now, the breath is the Holy Spirit, the third person of the Blessed Trinity. And in Hebrew, it's called Ruach Adonai. R-U-A-C-H is Ruach. A-D-O-N-A-I is Adonai. And we translate that in English as the breath of God. Breathe on me, breath of God. Do you know that hymn? Now, the breath of God is the source of life. You will see that if you go back to Genesis 2:7. That Adam did not become a living being until the breath of God was poured into him. When you go to John chapter 20 and verse 22, you'll find that Jesus had formed the church in the 12 apostles, ending up with 11. But they were literally not able to go out and be church until after the resurrection, when he breathed upon them and gave them the Holy Spirit. Okay, so that's Genesis 2:7 and John 20:22. That's just to show you how central the breath is. And of course, the name that the Hebrew people gave to God was this, Yahweh. That's my out-breath and my in-breath. So the sacred name that they actually don't pronounce is my very breath. Or if I gave you that in English, I am because he is. I cannot live unless he lives. My daughter, Jesus said, the person is nothing other than my breath or the soul. As I breathe, I give life to everything. All life is in the breathing. As I shared with one of the groups just very recently, a lovely experience I had in South Africa, in Pretoria, giving a retreat there some years ago, was that in the local hospital, on one level of the hospital, an old man died at exactly 11 o'clock in the morning, and his grandson on another level was born at exactly 11 a.m. the same morning. And so when we had the funeral for the granddad, we spoke about the breath of God being breathed in at the first point of life and being given back to God. And so we are called a breathing, living planet because of the fact that the breath of life is breathed in and breathed out. So that's why they would use that expression, Yahweh, for God, the breathing in and the breathing out. All life is in the breathing, Jesus said. If there's no breathing, the heart no longer beats, the blood no longer circulates, the hands remain inactive, the mind feels, the intelligence die, and so with all the rest. Psalm 146, verse 4. Psalm 146, verse 4. So, the whole of human life is in receiving and giving this breath, which I've just illustrated. But while with my breath I give life and motion to all creatures, and with my holy breath I want to sanctify them, love them, embellish them, enrich them, etc. In giving me the breath they receive, they send me offences, rebellions, ingratitudes, blasphemies, denials, and all the rest. You can only give what you have. He gives us love and life. And if we're in an unredeemed state, we give back that unredeemed state to him continuously. So I send the breath as pure and it comes back to me impure. Now, the fullest meaning of the word impure means that there is contamination in the thing. All of us love beautiful music, but if some of the notes are off, it's really terrible and you won't listen to it. In other words, the notes are impure. A lovely, fresh glass of water is a wonderful thing to drink, but if there are impurities in it, you wouldn't touch it. So if there are impurities in our love, our service, our prayer, our intercessions, then we've spoiled the whole thing. Do you get the point? Jesus said, I send the breath as a blessing and it comes back to me as cursing. I send it out all love and it comes back to me offending me deep into my inmost heart. But love makes me continue to send the breath and to maintain these machines of human lives. I love that expression. I think this is the only time in these volumes that the human being is called a machine. Okay. Otherwise, they would no longer function and they would end up in ruin. Now, notice the incredible love of God, that regardless of the response that is given back to him, he continues to love because God is love. That's who he is. Jesus said, Ah, my daughter, have you heard how human life is maintained by my breath? Please turn off all mobile phones, will you? Human life is maintained by my breath. And when I find a soul who loves me, how sweet her breath is, how she delights me, I feel cheered. So when we love him, our breath is going back to him as love. So love is meeting love. How she delights me. Now the translator says amuses me. In English, we don't use amuses in this context. We say delight. An echo of harmonies forms between me and the soul, which remain distinct from all other people. In other words, God is able to distinguish, that's my Mary, that's my John. That there's something very distinctive about each one of us. And that's why you've heard me say over the years that it is extremely important for each one of us to give back our own unique response to God. That we don't just give back some kind of a general response to God. There is a unique note in your response that is in nobody else. So let me read that again. An echo of harmonies forms between me and her, which remain distinct from other people and will be distinct also in heaven. That's terribly important. My daughter, I could not contain my love and I wanted to pour it out with you, he said. So today, Louisa said, I could not fuse myself in Jesus because he himself kept me occupied in his breath. How many things I understood, but I'm unable to say them all and I stop here. Okay, so I want you to hear that uniqueness that the Lord is touching there so that we will not just be robots repeating back other words, even if they're very wonderful words. That doesn't mean that you can't use prayers in the divine will, but just make sure that you make them yours. Like the prayer you're looking at, that you just understand what it is saying and then give it to the Lord in your words. So that he's hearing you and not somebody else. So May the 12th, 1917. One who doubts about the love of Jesus saddens him. Since my beloved Jesus had not come and I was very afflicted, while I was praying, a thought flew through my mind. Did the thought ever come to you that you might be lost? Now, guess where that's coming from. I never really think about this, said Louisa, naturally because her whole mind and her whole being is occupied with the Lord. So why should she be thinking thoughts like that? So I remained a bit surprised. But good Jesus, who watches over me in everything, Psalm 139, moved immediately in my interior, which means he's actually there. So that's Luke 17:21. The kingdom of God is within you. Now, do you think that that thought is a problem that Louisa has? The answer is no. In these writings, the Lord often allows Louisa to appear to have a problem, which is not actually her own, but because these writings are for the generations that come after Louisa. So it's you and I can have the temptation. Maybe this is all fancy stuff, and maybe I could be lost in the end, that I could be deceived. And so the Lord answers that for us. My daughter, he said, this is true strangeness, and which saddens my love very much. That love should have a capital L, because it's divine. If a daughter said to her father, I am not your daughter, you will not give me a share in your inheritance. You don't want to give me food. You don't want to keep me in your house. And she torments herself and sends out laments. What would the poor father say? Strangeness, this daughter is crazy. And with all love, he would say to her, but tell me, if you're not my daughter, whose daughter are you? How is this? You live under my roof. You don't have to say my same roof. You live under my roof. You eat at my table. I clothe you with my money. I earned by my own sweat. If you are ill, I assist you and I procure the means to heal you. And you doubt about being my daughter. Now, what Jesus is saying there is, not talking to Louisa, because it's not her problem. If you are in relationship with Jesus, and if you are loving him, and if you are responding to him, and you are trying to be close to him, why would you doubt? Why would you doubt? Now, it's Satan that wants to insinuate the thought, maybe you're just deceiving yourself. You know, I remember, many, many years ago, in fact, it was the first time I ever spoke to a large crowd. And I was walking into the hall to give my teaching. It was a scripture teaching. And I was all alone. And this crowd was several hundred people who were waiting for me. And I heard this guttural voice over my shoulder. And I looked around and I didn't see anything. And the guttural voice said, if they knew what you were like, they wouldn't listen to you. Now, I'm one of these people that can think of a brilliant answer 2 days later. But the Lord gave me an extraordinary grace to answer him immediately. And the answer lies in the words of Jesus, the truth will set you free. So I turned to that voice and there was no figure there. And I said, I'm bad enough. You make it worse. Get the hell out of here. He never tried it again, ever. I was not pretending to be good. I was not pretending to be a saint. I was not pretending to be better than anybody else. And the reason why I'm giving you that example is that when all of us go to Drumantine, we're not going because we're better than anybody else. We're not going because we know anything more than anybody else. That's absolutely not the reason why we're going. We're just simply going to give glory to God and to love each other in divine love. And when you are completely clear about it, if that the guttural voice may not come as strongly as that to you, most of the time, Satan will slither a little thought into your head. Sure, I couldn't possibly do that. Sure, I mean, what do I know? That's coming from outside. And just get rid of it. You're not going because you know everything about anything or anything about everything. That's not the reason why we're going. We're going to give glory to God and to love one another with divine love. So Jesus said, why would you doubt? You see, the thing he loves most is surrender and trust. And surrender and trust are the two wings of the eagle. And I introduced you to the eagle a long time ago. Okay. Surrender and trust. We surrender absolutely to God and we trust him beyond reason. The Lord told me some years ago to tell everybody I ever addressed that in the years to come. Now, he gave me this about 10 years ago. He said, in the years to come, you're going to need this as much as you need air. You must trust me beyond reason. Now that the chastisement has started, we knew it was going to come in 2020. Now that it has started, trust him beyond reason. Is that okay? You'll be okay. And everybody around you will be okay if you trust him beyond reason, because you will have brought God and his presence and his grace and his glory into your circumstances and into your situation. So you don't doubt that you are his daughter or his son. With more reason, Jesus said, I would say to one who doubts about my love and feared that she might be lost, how is this? Watch this. Number one, I give you my flesh for food. Did all of us receive Holy Communion today? Well, how on earth could you go to hell? Hell wouldn't have you. Hell would throw you out. You're not one of us. Does the logic of that strike you? Yeah, he said, I give you my flesh for food to keep you completely my own. Number two, if you are ill, now you're speaking about spiritual illnesses, I heal you with my sacraments. Do you go to confession when you need? Of course. So we run to him as the healer. If you are stained, I wash you with my blood. 1, 2, and 3. To give you absolute, he's trying to give each one of us absolute assurance that we are his. I can say that I am almost at your disposal. And you doubt? You want to sadden me? Tell me then, do you love somebody else? Do you recognize some other being as your father? Father means origin. It comes from the word Abba, which means origin. Who says that you are not my daughter? And if this is not, why do you want to afflict yourself and sadden me? Isn't the bitterness that others people give me enough that you shouldn't add any more pains to my heart? In other words, for those of us who are living as much as we can in the divine will, it would sadden the Lord terribly if we doubted that the reality of what is happening within us. It would sadden him terribly. In other words, it would mean people who are trying to live at the highest level of holiness would actually have a doubt in their heads. But Satan doesn't let you off the hook. So it's a good warning to you. Okay. On May the 16th, 1917, we get a lovely reflection on the hours of the Passion, and I think it's a very important one. Finding myself in my usual state, I was fusing all of myself in my sweet Jesus. Now, I've mentioned that to some of you recently, that we should say to the Lord quite frequently, I fuse all of me in all of you. Now, notice Louisa is fusing all of herself. She's keeping nothing back. And then I poured all of myself into souls. You see, if I fuse all of myself in Jesus, then I can diffuse all of myself into souls in order to give the whole lot of them to Jesus. Isn't it wonderful? And my beloved Jesus told me, my daughter, every time you fuse yourself in me, you give to all souls the influence of divine life. Now put VIP and anything else you can put on that, or colour it in a major colour. Every single time you fuse yourself in Jesus, you give the influence of divine life to all souls. What do the people in this country and every country need more than air? Only the influence of divine life. Okay. And according to what they need, they will obtain their effect. So watch this. You're simply fusing all of you in all of him so that this divine influence will go out to all. And he decides who gets what according to their disposition. Those who are weak will get strength. Those who are obstinate in sin will receive light. And those who suffer will receive comfort and all the rest. He's only given examples. There's lots of others. I think that's fantastic, don't you? Then I found myself outside of myself, Louisa said. So she's in an out-of-the-body experience. I was in the midst of many souls who were saying to me, she said, they seemed to be purging souls and saints. So she got the mixture of the whole family. And they were mentioning one person known to me who died not too long ago. And they were saying to me, watch this now. He feels as though happy in seeing that there's not one soul who enters purgatory without carrying the mark of the hours of the Passion. Please, but a huge VIP. He feels as though happy in seeing that there's not one soul who enters purgatory without carrying the mark of the hours of the Passion. And surrounded by the cortege of these hours and helped by them, souls find a safe place. Look what we're doing for other people in doing the hours of the Passion. Isn't it incredible? And there's not one soul, look at that, I didn't write it, there's not one soul who flies into heaven without being accompanied by these hours of the Passion. Notice why the prayer needs to go past as well as present, as well as future. These hours make a continuous dew rain down from heaven to earth, into purgatory, and even into heaven itself. Talk about ministering to the whole church. The church in heaven, the church on earth, and the church in purgatory. Isn't that absolutely amazing? On hearing this, Louisa said, "Maybe my beloved Jesus, in order to keep the word that he gave me, that for each word of the hours of the Passion he would give a soul, there's not one soul whom he saves who does not benefit from these hours." That's where you get this message, that for every word of the hours of the Passion he would save a soul. But if you just simply read them, it doesn't work. It's only when you pray the hours of the Passion in the divine will that souls are saved. If you just read them as an ordinary devotion, no. It must be done specifically fused in the divine will. So afterwards, Louisa said, "I returned into myself, and as I found my sweet Jesus, I asked him whether this was true. And Jesus said, these hours are the order of the universe." Now, that's not an answer I was expecting. "They put heaven and earth in harmony. They hold me back from sending the world to ruin. I feel my blood, my wounds, my love, and everything I did being placed in circulation. And they flow over all that's past, present, and future." So that's your PPF there. "In order to save everyone. And as souls do these hours of the Passion, I feel my blood, my wounds, my yearnings to save souls being put on the way. And I feel my life being repeated. How could creatures obtain any good if not by means of these hours?" So I don't think you and I could even imagine how much the souls in purgatory want us to pray the hours of the Passion. "Why do you doubt?" he said. "This thing is not yours. It's mine. You have been the strained and weak instrument." Now, I put a few little ticks after that. He continuously uses weak instruments, and we're under pressure and we're strained. And many of us are stained as well. But he doesn't mind. I mean, if you have a pencil, that's not the most beautiful pencil, and it may even be broken at the back. But if the pencil actually works brilliantly, wouldn't you use it? Of course you would. Do I need this pen to have gold and silver on it? Not at all, so long as the ink actually works. And the point is that if we will actually let the Lord do his work in us and through us, our faults and failings are not a bother to him. Now, I'm sure the theologians would hit me over the head for saying that. But actually, they're not. We're inclined, particularly looking back at the way we were trained when we were kids, you know, we're inclined to look back, and if there's the smallest drawback in me, God couldn't possibly use me. Forget that. He is the only one who knows how to write straight with crooked lines. The only thing that worries him is that if you put your will into a sin or a fault, then you've put a block between you and him. Okay? He doesn't mind using strained and weak instruments. That to me, I read that for my comfort. Don't know about you. So June the 7th, 1917. The soul remains separated from Jesus when she lets something that does not belong to him enter into herself. This is the only bit that can hold you back from the divine will. Finding myself in my usual state, I was lamenting to my sweet Jesus because of his privations and was saying to him, what bitter separation, separated from you, everything is over. I have remained the most unhappy soul that can exist. Okay, so for that, I want to give you Psalm 63, the whole of it, and Psalm 42. I'll just give you a few bits from Psalm 42. I have nothing but tears for my bread night and day as I keep saying, where is your God? Louisa, it's like as if it was written for her. So Jesus interrupted her and he said, my daughter, what separation are you fishing for? I love the expression. Do you see that? I mean, where do you think the break is? By volume 12, Louisa and Jesus are already inseparable. They have become one. So if you have become one, where are you going to get the separation? Okay. But of course, the lesson is for you and me. It's not really for Louisa. Only when she lets something that does not belong to me enter into herself, then is the soul separated from me. Okay, so at this moment, we are fused in the divine will. We are reading and thinking about this material in the divine will. But if I let a little bit of selfishness into me, then I put a block. Or since I'm the one that's speaking to you, if I put a little bit of pride into me that I'm somehow better than you because I'm doing this and you're listening to it, I'm switched off. Something that doesn't belong to him will make the break. Is that clear? So this is why we've got to watch ourselves very carefully. And one of the things that I think we should do very carefully in Lent is, if I have said or done something, instead of concentrating on the thing that I've said or done, is to go into myself and say, why did you do it? Why did you say it? Because if you go back into the why, you're going back into the roots. And if you can confess, I said that negative thing to somebody because, then the priest knows he has somebody who's actually repenting. If I can tell him the why. So the why is terribly important. Therefore, Jesus said, I enter into the soul, and if I find her will my own, see, that's the issue. Okay. I find her desires, her affections, her thoughts, her heart. I find everything as my own. Then I absorb her into myself. That's John 14. 20 to 21, you and me and I in you. And with the fire of my love, I keep liquefying her will with me. Now, I love this expression. So would you put a little heading on this paragraph? Liquefying the human will. That's pretty strong language, you know. Liquefying. Because that means then that the human will surrenders completely. Liquefying her will with mine, making them one. I liquefy her desires with mine. So that means we end up only with his desires. I liquefy her affections, which means we end up with his way of loving. I liquefy her thoughts with mine, so we sink the same as Christ. So beside that, I want you to put Philippians chapter 2. And I think it's verses 1 to 4. Everyone must think like Christ. You must have the mind of Christ. And then, of course, if you go on in Philippians chapter 2, his state was divine and he didn't cling to his equality with God and became one of us, humbler yet, accepting death. And you have the whole downward movement of humiliation before you have the exaltation. So our minds must be like him. We must think like him. And once I have formed one single liquid. Now, if you look at this, I have a glass of water. If I had two glasses with half of the water each and poured them into the one glass, Can you separate the water afterwards? No. They've become one. There's absolutely no way you can separate them. That's what Jesus is saying. And that's why the query as, you know, am I your daughter? Am I separated from you? Doesn't make any sense if you've become totally one. No scientist on earth could separate one section of that water from the other. It's totally fused. Is that okay? So he said, once I have formed one single liquid, I pour it over my whole humanity like celestial dew. Now, I think that is utterly divine. He says, the few people who will allow me to bring them to this stage where their will is liquefied with mine, he said, that is the dew that actually gives me the comfort in my humanity. So we do an incredible service to Jesus by surrendering ourselves to him. I pour it over my whole humanity like celestial dew. And as it forms into as many drops of dew as there are offences that I receive, they kiss me, they love me, they repair me, they embalm my bittered wounds. It is my absolute surrender, letting my will being taken up into the divine will automatically have this effect on him. And so it will do the reparation and the comforting of Jesus in his passion. It's incredible. And it means that, of course, he knew everything because he's God. So he knew that I was going to reach this point. So I actually participate in his passion. And so when I go into the hours of the passion, I'm there. I'm actually present. I'm not just in my house saying these wonderful prayers. I'm actually there at the time. It's terribly important. And since I'm in the act of doing good, now this act of doing good is permanent and continuous. This dew descends for the good of all creatures. And I want to give you 1 John 3:2 for that. And you'll notice that anything we do must be for the good of all creatures. He doesn't let us off the hook on that one. But now we've had this glorious oneness, okay? But if I find something extraneous in the soul which doesn't belong to me, I cannot melt what is hers with mine, because love alone is what has the power of melting and becoming one. So that means there's something unloving found in me. There's a very telling text in Ezekiel. It's around chapter 26, where the prophet speaks about the fall of Lucifer. And in it, he says, you were the most beautiful one until pride was found in you. Then you have the fall. The sin is what destroys everything. So the something extraneous to the divine will is something that I want for me. Therefore, I am no longer willing to live a surrendered life. Now, remember the wonderful statement of St. John of the Cross, that love can be repaid by love alone. But since you are parents and you've raised children, you know that in your experience anyway. If a child tried to pay you back with money for what you have done for them, it would only be an insult. There's only one response, and that is love must be returned as love. And when the love is returned as love, the parent feels completely paid. Am I right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because love is a cycle. Sin is a cycle and love is a cycle. So love goes out and does something for another, and then that other must send love back to its source, and then the cycle will continue on and on and on. Sin is the exact opposite. It actually breaks the love cycle and creates a devastation cycle on the earth. So love alone has the power of melting and becoming one. So That's why the image of marriage is used by all writers, including the Song of Songs and all our saints and mystics, for the union of the soul with God and the union of the church with Christ, because it's a surrender in love. Things that are similar are those that can mix together and can have the same value. Therefore, if in the soul there's iron and thorn and stones, how can they melt? Now, notice iron, thorns and stones, they're all hard. They're all unbending. And if you put the thorns, they're also wounding. Okay, so that's the sinfulness that's in us. And then there are separations and unhappiness. So if nothing has entered into your heart, he said, how can I separate? So I want to give you 1 John 2, 6. 1 John 2, 6 and verse 10 as well. And 1 John 3, 6. So I want to go to June the 14th, 1917. This is a very important message, and it's about stripping. So it's a very good Lenten message. So this is June the 14th. Continue in my usual state, I was praying my beloved Jesus to come into me in order to love, pray, repair, for I knew how to do nothing. And sweet Jesus moved to compassion for my nothingness. Now that's John 15:5. Without me, you can do nothing. And we need to have that one absolutely in our head all the time, because that will make us throw ourselves upon God. So he had compassion for my nothingness. And please remember, when you go to Drumantine, he's going to have compassion on our nothingness. But we all have to, we'll prepare you for this. We all have to go there absolutely in our nothingness for him to take over. So he's moved to compassion for our nothingness. He came remaining with me to pray, loving and repairing together with me. And then he said, my daughter, the more the soul strips herself of herself, that's her ego, the more I clothe her with myself. It's about as simple as that. The surrender that we've got to make is this ego. We've got to surrender it to him. The more she believes she can do nothing, the more I act in her. Now that leaves all of you new teachers without excuse. If you say you can't do it, you don't feel you can do it and all the rest, cheer up. The more she believes she can do nothing, the more I will act in her. It's a case of opening up to him. And that's going to be the miracle of Drumantine. That little people, acknowledging their nothingness, will open up and let the Lord do whatever he wants to do. He said, and I do everything. Isn't that fantastic? I feel all my love, my prayers and my reparations being placed in act by the soul. And to give honour to myself, I listen to whatever she does. She wants to love, I go to her and I love together with her. She wants to pray, I pray with her. In sum, her stripping and her love, which is mine, bind me and force me to do with her whatever she wants to do. There it is, simple. I want him to explain this to you because I'm useless. So what does he do? He explains it. So do I have to be clever? No. In sum, her stripping and her love, which is mine, bind me and force me to do with her whatever she wants to do. And I give to the soul the merit of my love, of my prayers, and of my reparations. And to my highest contentment, I feel my life being repeated, and I make the effects of my operating descend for the good of all. Notice the universalism there. Because it's not of the creature, it's mine. You see, the marvel is that when we surrender to the divine will, it really is his work, it's not ours. And that's exactly what we need. If everything we say and do in Drumantine is his and not ours, we are going to be astonished by this tsunami of grace. That's the reason why we're gathering. So let's take July the 4th, 1917. All the pains of creatures were suffered before by Jesus. This is terribly important now when you have your arthritic pains and your this pains and your that pains and your the other pains. He did it before you. One who does the divine will is together with Jesus in the tabernacle. So we've got two topics here. So Louisa says, continuing in my usual state, I was feeling a little in suffering. And my adorable Jesus on coming placed himself in front of me, and it seemed that between me and Jesus there were many electric wires of communication. Isn't that wonderful? Now, the reason why I think it's wonderful is not just that it's a spiritual message, it's that it's 1917 and they've only just discovered electricity. And as soon as a discovery comes up, you'll find them referred to in the writings. It's really lovely to see that. So Jesus said, my daughter, each pain that the soul suffers is one more communication that the soul acquires. Please put some big kind of a notice on that. Each pain. Because when we begin to understand this, you won't be running for the Panadol. You'll be running for divine currency instead. Okay? In fact, all the pains that the soul could suffer were suffered before by me in my humanity. Okay, so I take this painful back that I have, and immediately, I do it even before I get out of bed in the morning, because getting out of the bed is part of the problem. I say, my back with yours, in your scourging, in your divine will, to cleanse everyone. Cleanse everyone. And there you've put an investment in the bank before you put your foot on the floor. I do it before the prevenient act and before everything else. I don't even wait. All your pains are very important. Now, that doesn't mean that if you have something drastic wrong with you, that you shouldn't go and get medical help. You should. You know, but just don't run for the Panadol every time. So all the pains that the soul could suffer were suffered before by me in my humanity and took their place in the divine order. Look at that. All my pains in him and through him took their place in the divine order. I like that. That means I don't have a problem with my back. Now do you get it? I have a privilege. I don't have a problem. And since the person cannot suffer them all together, my goodness communicates them little by little. Apparently, as you grow older, he seems to think you can take more. And as it communicates them, the chains of union with me keep growing. Isn't that fantastic? And not only with pains, but with anything good that the creature can do. Now look at the little word anything. That's terribly important because Saint Therese of Lisieux said that if you pick up a pin from the floor with the desire of making an act of pure love for God, that tiny action, which nobody will even notice, is, she said, it's better than all the projects on the planet because it's the pure love of God. Now, Therese was before the divine will, so do it for pure love of God and in the divine will, and the good is immeasurable. So Jesus said, so do the links of connection develop between me and her. Isn't that fantastic? So every difficulty I have, physical, emotional, mental and spiritual, all of them are links to his passion. Louisa said, another day I was thinking to myself of the good that other souls receive by being in front of the Most Blessed Sacrament. So here's the second topic. And she said, I'm the poor one, deprived of it. And Blessed Jesus told me, she wasn't deprived of it continuously because eventually they allowed her to have the Blessed Sacrament in her room. Jesus said, my daughter, one who does my will, now, they actually mean lives in my divine will, is together with me in the tabernacle. Why? because Jesus is present in the tabernacle, body, blood, soul and divinity. And you're fused with him in the divinity. So, of course, you're with him in the tabernacle. It's just that we have to become aware of the reality. They're together with me in the tabernacle and they take part in my pains, in the coldness, in the irreverence and in everything which the very souls, which souls do who are in my presence. So souls, people going to church and acting irreverently towards the Blessed Sacrament, and you're in the divine will, you are allowed to make reparation for that. So make sure that you're not the one complaining about what the others are doing. Because if you're doing the complaining, you've slipped out of the divine will. Is that okay? And I can tell you from the book of Exodus that the one thing that the Lord hates more than anything else is grumbling and murmuring and complaining. He actually punished the people in the desert several times just for grumbling and complaining. Why? Because it's the exact opposite of turning to him in humility, asking him for help. They should have said, give us this day our daily bread, and saying, why did God bring us out into the wilderness to die of starvation in the wilderness? And it would have taken only a second to say, give us this day our daily bread. Now, Irish people are very prone to complaining. We say, I'm only telling you now. I'm only telling you. And somebody ought to do this. But it's not me, of course. That's the grumbling and complaining and finding fault. The Lord hates that because all of that is the opposite of love. So I'm only pointing that out so that we become aware of things we can slip into without even thinking about it, because it's accepted all around us, you know, as the way people respond. So here we are, and we can participate in making reparation to the Lord. One who does my will and lives in the divine will, this is number two, must excel in everything. Now, I didn't write that, I'm only reading it. You must excel in everything. Why? Because the divine will is the highest level of spirituality that a soul can reach. That's why you have to excel. And the place of honour is always reserved for her. Therefore, who receives more good? The one who is before me, that is physically present in the church, or one who is with me? Of course, the one who is with him. For one who lives in my will, I do not tolerate even one step of distance between me and her, or division of pains or of joys. I may keep her on the cross, but it's always with me. And you've heard endlessly that Louisa says suffering is one thing, but suffering when Jesus is there is quite another matter altogether. This is why then I want you always in my will. I want to give you the first place over my sacramental heart. Look at that. Therefore, adoration for us is breathing, okay? I want to feel your heart palpitating in mine, with my own love and pain, not just with human love, with divine love. I want to feel your will in mine, which multiplying in everyone may give me with one single act the reparations of all and the love of all. And my will in yours, which making your poor humanity my own, may elevate it before the majesty of the Father as a continuous victim. Look what he's prepared to do with our absolute nothing. Now I'm going to stop there and give you a break.